Good morning, everybody. It's great when they can say it back. I love Zoom, I really do, but I talk to it and nobody talks back to me and I feel lonely. So because I've been so lonely, I've actually asked Chase to join us, who is a superstar when it comes to security and his background is terrifying.
That's a low bar if I'm terrifying.
So we want to talk a little bit about the state of cybersecurity, which we know is bad, and what we can do to move forward and protect ourselves. Over the next few days, we're going to show you hacking techniques. We're going to teach you how to secure your stack. We're going to teach you how to drink, and lots of other things. So hopefully, you come away a little bit smarter than you came in. If not, we apologize, but hopefully the alcohol makes up for it again. So Chase, maybe, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about your background. I know it's colorful, more exciting than mine.
Yeah, well, good word is colorful. So I'm retired Navy. You can probably tell by the dirtbag tattoos and that type of thing. Did my time doing support operations, worked at Fort Meade for quite a while, back and forth in and out of there. Promise I wasn't the janitor. I actually did cyber work there. So did a bunch of consulting work after that for the US government, three-letter agencies. And eventually wound up stumbling my way over to Forrester, where I was the guy that wrote the Zero Trust Extended framework. Did a whole bunch of stuff around ZT. If you look on LinkedIn or Twitter or YouTube, I apologize in advance, you're going to find me on there repeatedly talking about Zero Trust. So, rolled with that from that spot. And then now I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at Ericom Software, which is in the same space. We're all doing Zero Trust work one way or the other.
So here's the problem I have. I'm up here as a Zero Trust authority, standing next to the guy that wrote the framework. I'm going to look really dumb. So just to begin with, if we think about where we are from a cybersecurity point of view, I think this image explains it perfectly. We're stuck, and we're not moving anywhere, and diggers aren't going to help us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We've gone over the, I've just watched over the last decade cyber breaches getting worse, more hacks, more data loss, more money loss, and essentially go from this stage of malware's a nuisance and cyber breaches are a nuisance for most businesses to business owners crying down the phone because they've lost their business. MSPs getting that sick feeling in their stomach over and over again because their client got hit by ransomware, something bad happened. And we need to figure out how can we actually move forward and how can we change the paradigm so we're not stuck anymore. And we're winning against the cyber criminals.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a space where we continue to solve a lot of the same problems. We solve them with sexier solutions. I can't count the number of times I've been on a workshop about Zero Trust where the folks are talking about post-quantum encryption. And I'm like, well, have you turned on multi-factor auth? They're like, well, we're getting to that. Like, tell you what, let's solve the simple problems first. Like, let's learn to ride a bicycle before we hop on a nuclear-powered jet engine and sort of, you know, figure out where we're going after the plane takes off. The things that we do in this space, it's not about lots and lots of technology. It's not. It's about the right technology to solve the right problem with the right strategic focus on the far end of that. Cybersecurity, if done correctly, and I hate to break it to everybody, is not necessarily extremely difficult to get right. At the end of the day, your goal in this space and the goal for your clients is to be a harder target than someone else down the street, right? I mean, if we're running in front of the zombie horde and you trip and fall, I'm sorry, bro, I'm not picking you up. Like, that's a tough day for you. If anything, I might kick you to keep you there as I continue to run off. That's why we put ADT signs up in front of our house, even if you don't have ADT, because you want the bad guys to go somewhere else. That's why you have dogs. That's why you have all these things in the regular world, so that the bad guys will go somewhere else. And from being on the adversary side, nation state level, red team, all that stuff, I can tell you, they have the same requirements we do. Like, their job is to go find other targets as fast as they possibly can, get an exploit, do the ransomware stuff, whatever else. They're on a timeline. They got budgets. They got bosses breathing down their necks. In some states and some nations, if they don't deliver enough customers in a certain amount of time, they wind up in a barrel out in the desert somewhere. Like, it's literally that bad in the criminal world. But the reality of it is, all you've got to do is be better than the next target, and they'll go there. Like, you're going to be okay. It's not worth their time. It's not worth their effort. And you've just got to use the right technology in the right manner to solve the right problems. And then eventually we can all collectively take this shift in this boat, or Austin Powers here, and turn him slightly to the left and maybe catch up with Elizabeth Hurley if we're really lucky. Yeah.
Right. Thousands of bits. I remember back when they used to call it IT security and not cybersecurity.
Yeah.
And if you were a big business, you had this security department. And that security department, if you were Bank of America, you had to worry about someone trying to get into the bank and steal your data or wire money. And you had to worry about that if you were the Department of Defense. So you always took security seriously, and you had an IT security department. If you were a small business, that didn't happen that much. You got malware, I mean, but it was mostly self-spreading malware, or you went on the wrong porn site or something like that, and it downloaded.
Nobody's ever done that at work, ever.
Nobody's, no, never.
No, never.
Nobody in ThreatLocker deny it. So and you got that malware because you were just stupid, and it wasn't that they were targeting you at all. Today, I mean, the effort we're seeing for people to get into small businesses, to dental offices, like, they're literally willing, some guy in Ukraine is engaging some guy in Kansas to go into a dental office and plug in a USB rubber ducky to gain access to their network, because they know, wow, this business has 10 employees, but I can get $200,000 from them. And it's a lot easier to get in there than it is to get into Bank of America. So why would you go after Bank of America when you can go after, make as much money from a small dental office or a small car dealership or an accountant?
Well, we're all connected, right? So, I mean, the thing about it is, if you look at the trend over time, I'm all about the data and the numbers and the indicators. If you look at the trend over time, it used to be big businesses. It used to be big corporations, because there was a lot of value when you got in. It was worth spending 9-18 months of doing recon to get into an asset of that size. Big businesses have done pretty good at kind of setting things up for the long haul. Now, yes, there's the folks that do the things that have the city or whoever it was that let their contractor basically out them on the internet, those types of things. But as far as their just general security practices, they've gotten better over time. The DoD has gotten better over time, other than SolarWinds, which is a whole other issue.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But in reality, for the adversary, it's not even worth their time and effort, other than nation state. And the reason they're going after all of the small businesses is because we're connected into the big businesses. Anybody ever heard of CMMC from the U.S. federal government? Right? What does CMMC talk about? What does it push you to do as a small business? It says you must be secure in a manner that you can prove to the prime that you are doing the right thing so that you can do business with the prime. If you're not CMMC compliant, what happens to you? You lose, somebody else takes your contract, and the prime goes, well, we got a new customer, right? We just continue to move on because we're big, we're secure. The reason that's happening is because the federal government, the DOD, the NSA, all those agencies have figured out that bad guys are targeting SMBs. They use us to get to them. And that's where it's going to continue to get bigger, badder, faster. More connectivity, more remote offices. How many people love suffering through COVID this year, where you continue to just expand and grow and let your people and your kids use your home internet to get access to your business? Like, this is going to continue to get bigger, badder, faster. But the reality of the flip side is, there are ways as small businesses that we can be much more dynamic and secure ourselves better than big businesses with much less budget, much less use of technology.
Who here has had a client with ransomware in the last 2 years? Okay, the people who didn't, well done. You're either really lucky,
or you don't know yet.
Oh, you don't know. So it's a big problem. Now, here's the other thing. Who here paid a ransom or had a client pay a ransom?
I told my client to pay the ransom.
Oh, you told him?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to upset Chase now. Because
it was way too late. They didn't have a choice.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But here's the thing. When you pay that ransom, where do you think the money goes?
Oh, yeah. It goes right back into the pot to make more ransom.
Well, it's not just ransomware. It's human trafficking. Yeah. It's drug trafficking. These are organized crime gangs that they're doing this. And nation states.
Yeah.
I mean, North Korea makes a crap load of money.
On Bitcoin.
On Bitcoin, yeah. From U.S. companies, yeah. Who can't get their data back. We seem to skip ahead a little bit.
We're just riffing.
Yeah. So. Now, here's the thing. The bad guys care about you. 10 years ago, if you were Bank of America, they cared about you and they wanted to go after you. Today, They love MSPs. MSPs are the easiest way to make more money. But they love your clients too. They want to go after car dealerships, mom and pop shops, accountants, people who would never even imagine that their data is worthwhile. Single person architects. Like a single person architect will write a check for 50 grand to get all his plans back. Like these are attractive targets and they care about them. You know who doesn't care about you? The media. They don't care about the local dental office. I mean, we see it in the media all the time. 400 dental offices get hit by ransomware. But for those 400, there's probably another 40,000 that didn't go reported because they were one dental office. So when you look at the news in the morning and you see CNN says, this company got breached, or CompuCom got hit by malware. They're a big MSP. They care about them. And I'm not saying that everyone here isn't big, but 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 seats gets printed. Most MSPs that get hit by ransomware don't get printed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you're law firms are the new one. I think that if you're looking for like the new hotness on the street in cyberspace, it's law firms. And they, I don't know why it took the bad guys this long to realize it, but there's lots and lots of really small law offices that have got 2, 3, 4, 5 lawyers, but they have really, really valuable access and really, really valuable intellectual property. Are there any lawyers in this room right now? Because I'm gonna say something, I'll probably piss them off. And they really suck at security. So that's like a prime target for the bad guys.
You missed something. They have a sense of self-importance that they know more than the IT professionals.
You said it, right? But I mean, that is probably, I think if you look at the trends over the last, say, 18 months, 2 years, you've seen that law firms have become one of the number one targets for these types of small business attacks. And it's literally just so they can get to that IP and use it for whatever purposes they want. And lawyers will stroke a check with a quickness, even though they don't even know when they're going to get their stuff back or if they're going to get their stuff back or how to spell Bitcoin. But I mean, they're going to get after law firms. Because law firms are the ones.
They make a lot of money.
Well, and the best thing too now lately is when they do pay their stuff, they come back and go, that wasn't enough, so we're just going to publish what you had anyway and we'll tie it all to your customers and clients and then we'll put you out of business because that's how we work.
So for those who don't know, we opened an office in Ireland last month and we brought a COO in to run the office, sorry, a VP of operations in to run the office in Ireland. And we hired him from an MSP. The week he was leaving the MSP, who was not a ThreatLocker client, they are now, the week he was leaving the MSP, their client got hit by ransomware, and it was a law firm. They encrypted all the files, but they left a note on the desktop. We've uploaded 1.5 terabytes of data, and the network logs confirm that. So,
did you check him for a USB or anything? Because that timing's a little suspicious. I left, all of a sudden, ransomware event.
Yeah, that's, well, just before he left, and then it was a great sale.
All right.
2,500 seats signed
that's
up.
That's a good sales practice.
I'm pretty sure it was a law firm. I'm saying that you can't complete it. But the point of this is the MSP was telling the customer what to do. They weren't listening to the MSP. And at some point, the MSP has to step up and say, you know, just like when you go to the doctor and he says, go and get on an exercise bike, the MSP has to step up and say, you've got to do what you need to do. Who here can afford to pay $20 million in ransom? Any hands? No? 10?
Insurance.
Well, there's a stuff.
Because insurance has never screwed anybody. Right? Have you ever like had to get an insurance claim on your car? Can you imagine going and getting an insurance claim on a multi-million dollar policy for cyber? Who's heard of Maersk and Norsk Hydro? Right? Somebody brought up insurance, so I'll talk about it real quick. Maersk and Norsk Hydro, they got brought down globally by ransomware. Right, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of insurance policy, cyber insurance policy. You know how much they've been paid so far? $3 million. And why? Because of the war clause. Who knew about a war clause in cybersecurity? But what did the insurance company say? Because we're back to the lawyer problem, right? We should just call this Zero Trust World / Nobody Likes Lawyers. But what happened was, the lawyers got involved because insurance companies' job is to not pay. That's how they work. That's how they make money, right? And they said, well, you were attacked by the Russians, and the software that you were attacked with came from the Ukraine. The Ukrainians are at sort of a war with Russia. Therefore, by the transitive property of cybersecurity, you are at war with Russia, so we won't pay.
Like, and then when they do, it's 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah. So then they said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll pay, but we're going to pay $3 million of that $250 million policy. So point being, and I have this in my slides later, so I guess I'm rolling open there, but like, don't trust cyber insurance. Like, if we're talking about zero trust world, don't trust cyber insurance, right? Their job is
zero trust to lawyers, zero trust to cyber insurance companies.
I think we're really just listing off stuff that we don't like personally.
Yeah. Who here can afford to pay $1 million? If your business depended on it, can anyone here put $1 million out? Nope. 100,000? These hackers are taking down the notes, by the way. So the reality is, obviously, it's surprising how much people pay when they have to and they get stuck in a corner. And the first case I ever dealt with ransomware was an insurance company in Australia. That should make you smile. And the insurance company had an MSP. Someone got on, opened an email attachment, and then that allowed them onto the server, encrypted everything, database, exchange, backups. This was in 2014 when ransomware was getting more popular but wasn't big. And they paid the $22,000 ransom. They didn't get their data back. Sometimes you get your data back, sometimes you don't. Either way, you lose because they've still got your data. Are you going to trust the guy to release your data? It's like saying someone took naked pictures of you, they're going to delete them if you give them $100. You can't trust that guy or girl to do that. Yeah. Because...
yeah, if somebody came up and just stuck their hand in your pocket and took your wallet and then walked off, and they say, you know what, I'll give you your wallet back, but I want some money for it. What would you do? You'd,
like, there's nothing in my wallet, so right? Look.
Like, I'd take him to the ground and like we'd be going at it. Yeah. One of us is not leaving there alive. But the thing about it is, that's the same thing that's going on here, is if somebody's taking your stuff, they're in the power position. You're not. Your only option is either pay up or suffer the consequences. And if you choose the latter, it could be really rough really fast. Bad guys, evil people, criminals, by their very nature, aren't necessarily known to be the most upstanding citizens on the planet. They may not give you your stuff back.
Theft of data is not just virtual now. And this is important. We often think about an employee coming in, plugging in a USB drive and stealing your files. And that happens. And there are bad employees. We background check all of our employees. We had a bad experience with one of our employees. It happens. We put controls in place to make sure those bad experiences don't turn into nightmares. But one of our employees one day decided to delete our RAID set on our SAN because he was in a bad mood with the CTO. Now, thankfully, we have multiple data centers and multiple RAID sets, and he couldn't take any data out, and he didn't last more than half an hour. He said it was a mistake that he went into the SAN, initialized the RAID set, went through the warnings.
A mistake with a couple of logins and
But people sometimes are bad. Most people are good, but some people are bad. So we think about our employees, and we want to make sure, as an MSP, as your customers, that you don't necessarily trust everyone with things they don't need to trust. And this is really the concept of zero trust. It's not about I don't like you or I do like you. If you don't need access to this file, you don't have to have access to that file. And that stops employees doing bad things, but it also stops attackers manipulating employees to do bad things, because it's not always just them. The other thing we're seeing, and I mentioned the physical for a reason, is more and more physical elements of attacks are happening. I saw a case yesterday, and I have, well, 3 days ago, where somebody got ransomware. They got onto the physical server, they rebooted the virtual server in safe mode, bypassing all the security software, because they got onto the physical server, and they copied like a terabyte of data onto a USB drive. I'm like, why? In my mind, the only explanation for that is someone's going to break into that office that day and take that drive. Why would you spend 3 hours when you could be encrypting files and making money copying data onto a USB drive? It was literally copying in front of their eyes. And this is happening more and more. We're seeing a break-in that nobody thinks anything of that turns into a rubber ducky or an OMG cable being plugged into a computer or a server, someone walking in and taking physical things. And like, we saw the case. Again, the media cares about Tesla. We saw the case of someone offering $500,000 to someone who works in Tesla to plug in a USB device. That's all they had to do, was plug in a USB device, $500,000. What they didn't realize, the attacker, is $500,000 doesn't go very far in San Francisco. they need to offer at least
$2 million. That would have got them like a small townhouse or condo somewhere that no one else wanted to live in.
Under a bridge. Yeah.
So a cardboard box would have been well, you know.
Yeah, so it didn't work. Again, that got reported in the press, but for every Tesla, there's 5,000 car dealers and dental offices and healthcare providers where someone can physically walk into the building, either break into a building, or every time I go into the kids' hospital, which is not very often because my wife takes the kids most of the time, and I look at their computers and I see like USB ports at the front desk, yeah. And all I think in my mind is I could just leave an OMG cable here and deliver a remote payload later on and you can do nothing about it. This is the dumbest thing going. I almost want to put duct tape over it or something just to make them a little bit safer.
Yeah, I mean, when I was red teaming, I was lucky enough I got to red team one of the most, one of the most successful movie studios in history, right? They called us out the pen test and they said, go nuts, do whatever you want, bring the heat, we're good. Like, we ain't scared. Like, okay, careful what you wish for. So one of my favorite toys that I have that my friends and I put together, and I'll show it to you after if you want to look at it, it's a drone with the Wi-Fi pineapple and LTE stack and everything else on it. And we landed on the roof. And the first thing that it does is scans for wireless stuff, jumps into whatever wireless network it can get, and then we work our way through there. We were in a golf cart sitting behind the studio, piping data out of their system because we landed a drone on the roof. And when we went to the debrief and we showed them all the stuff that we had from the movies they were working on and whatever else, they were like, well, who would land a drone on the roof? We're like, we would. Like, that was literally the first thing we thought of is, man, let's bring the drone.
So you have the drone or just the pineapple?
No, it's the drone and the pineapple.
You got it here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. No, I didn't bring it with me, but I got the photos of it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping you were going to fly it around the room. I think we do have a pineapple here, though, which Liam's going to show you. So if you haven't seen a pineapple before and want to waste some money on some gimmicks, Liam's going to show you a really cool pineapple.
The other one I really enjoy is ESPN. We did a pen test at ESPN, and they allowed me to use their name. But for them, you're only allowed to get in from the door if you go up to the door and the motion sensor gets you to come out,
yeah.
Right? You know what goes really well underneath a door? Go over to CVS and buy those party balloons. If you lay on the floor and blow it up and let it go, the door opens wide up for you. Like, we got through their security, their physical security, in under 60 seconds with a balloon from CVS for like 99 cents. But again, when you go to the debrief, well, who would do that? Well, bad guys would. Like, you paid us to think like the bad guys, so watch what happens. You know, where there's no rules if you tell somebody, you know, we're going to get, nobody comes up to you and says, let's get in a fist fight, and then they go, well, put your left foot forward, and I'll put my right hand back. Like, no, this is a fight, man. Like you're going to get into it and be ready to roll.
As MSPs, we have to think about how can we defend small businesses from enterprise attacks? Because if we can't, then we might as well give up. Because guess what? The attacks that you're facing, your clients are facing, are not small business attacks anymore. I remember the love bug virus. It told you it loved you, and then emailed all your friends and told them that it loved you. Who gives a shit about that?
So, people don't want love. People want to be loved.
So, the first time I ever saw a virus that actually effectively took money from somebody was a friend of ours who worked at the company I was working for said, can you come around and look at my computer? I had a €900 phone bill. And in Ireland, I don't know if they have that here. I've never seen them, these premium numbers. You pay like a dollar a minute to call and speak to someone on the phone who's, you know, really like £600. But in Ireland, they have these things and they have these premium rate numbers. And somebody's modem, this is back when we had modems, had started dialing this premium rate number in the middle of the night, and she, can you help me? That was the first time I ever saw money get taken from a virus, because she was €900 in, and she was really mad about it. Her brother had been downloading pornography or something and gone to the wrong site.
Porn will get you every time.
But these aren't attacks we're dealing with anymore. We're dealing with serious players who are going to, one day they will just cast their eyes over you and they'll say, this guy looks nice. I wanna go after him. I wanna go after this client, and I'm gonna put 8 hours into it, 100 hours into it, because I know 100 hours, there's a 30% chance I'm going to get in, and that's $100,000 payday. I'm okay with those odds.
I would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was a less scrupulous individual, I would totally do that. I think I'm in the wrong business most of the time.
If you're in a different country, there'd be no question.
Right? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe I'll move there. But the other thing, too, is small businesses need to stop saying that they're not nation-state worthy, because they are. If you're nation state, you like small businesses because of the connections they have. And if nothing else, you're a hop that they can use to sell to somebody else. Nation states bust stuff on the underground all the time, and they go off and resell it because of, like you were talking about, North Korea. They need money. I mean, the people are there so poor they eat grass. Like, they'll take whatever money they can get. But nation states, unequivocally, are very interested in small businesses. So anyone that comes to an MSP and says, well, we're a small business, China wouldn't care about us, Russia's not after us. They do, they are, they will. Like, that's the reality of it.
When we're trying to protect our assets, there's two areas. This isn't, security isn't complicated. I mean, I know there's 6,000 logos.
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be complicated.
It shouldn't be, but we have a market that's made it very complicated.
There's 6,000 logos out there that all say, you know, I do something slightly different to the next guy, and I'm a little bit better on this guy. And what we essentially ended up with was this great house alarm system. We've got three house alarms in our house. We've got motion sensors. We've got glass breaking sensors. Yeah. We've got laser beams.
We have chihuahuas with lasers on their heads.
Yeah. Like. And guess what? The front door's not locked.
Right.
So, but security doesn't have to be complicated. Really, you've got to think about security. There's two things you want to worry about, or three things. There's the data. Where is our asset? Where does that asset lie? And that asset could be on your physical server. It could be in Office 365. It could be a cloud accounting system. And then there's the endpoint. And then there's the bit in the middle. But if you're not using encryption in 2021, just quit and go and sell cars or something.
Yeah, make baskets or something. You know, go shovel stuff or make baskets.
But essentially, those are the two things we have to worry about. And when we start to break these down, there's really, well, in many cases, only one place. There's only two places you can get that data, encrypt that data, change that data, steal that data, and that is the endpoint or the data itself. And we'll start with the endpoint, because the endpoint has to be protected. And there really are, if you break it down, I mean, I'm sure there's loads of products out there. There's really only two ways, though, that your endpoint gets compromised. One is through a network connection. So you have ports open, they connect to it, they use RPC, they copy your files. And the other one is through a malicious application or a misused application. So it's either software or network. I mean, there's no magic, or physical, probably, is to ignore that. But there's no magic, I'm gonna send some laser beams in and get data off it. It has to happen one of those two ways. They're coming over the network, or they're coming in either through misuse of an application using a piece of malware. And applications aren't, it's not just malware, but remote access tools, IP scanners, and Office, PowerShell, all of these other tools can be used. But they're the two ways they're gonna get your data. And when we think about applications themselves, we think about executables, script files, browser extensions. Who knows this? Browser extensions. Who uses a password manager? Password manager is good. I'm not disputing that. But every time you go into your bank account or log into something, does your password manager say, do you want to save this password?
Yep.
Yeah. And how does it save that password? It can read the password, which is fine because you've decided, I trust SolarWinds to read my passwords. And you've made a decision that the benefit outweighs the risk. But guess what else can read your password? All of the other Chrome extensions. Honey. I mean, Google Chrome doesn't pop up and say, do you want to let Passportal read your password? No. Passportal pops up and says, I've read your password. Do you want to save it in your database? So can all of these other Chrome extensions. So we often think about Chrome extensions or browser extensions as being safe. Well, Google pulled over 500 that were malicious.
Android's like every one in six is malicious.
Yeah.
I think, one in six for Android. And if you look, there's like, I don't know, 7 billion applications in there for Android.
Yeah. So it's very easy to get very comfortable thinking this is safe and it's not. DLLs, Java files, but this is really kind of the definition of applications. And the attackers are either getting in one way or another. You're running it, because it's really hard to stop for a user to be tricked into running something, isn't it? Any of your users click on things? You got clickers, anyone?
No? Send pictures of puppies and cats, like puppies and kittens when I was doing fish and stuff, every time. You could send somebody, here's the executive pay scale for this month, and you know, here's this, you know, picture that we found of you looking at pornography. Eh, they might not click on that. Send a really good puppy picture every time.
We got forwarded an email from an MSP from their customer, and the customer had emailed them really, really mad, threat locker had popped up and blocked something. Why are you stopping me do my job? That was the exact words.
Because your job's about to get you owned.
Right, and I still have this resume in my demo environment a year later. And they opened this resume, they put in the password, the resume downloaded something from the internet, tried to open it, got blocked. It was ransomware. The customer, even after hitting the enable secure content, someone's put a 1234 password on their resume, which they put in the body of the email. That seems sensible. And the security software has blocked it. They're scratching their head saying, why is my IT department stopping me do my job? They didn't even 1 minute think, oh crap, I probably went too far on that.
Whoops. Uh-oh.
We do phishing testing for all of our staff. We're a security company. And some people are going to bow their head in this room right now. I won't name them. Some of our techs even clicked on the links. It's embarrassing to me. People are notoriously stupid.
I'm a big fan of technology over human behavior. Like, I hate to say it, and this is from a guy that's been divorced twice, so obviously I'm living it. You can't fix people, right? No matter how much I want you to be somebody else or how much I want you to do other things or whatever else, I can't make you not be you, and I can't make you not do things with stuff that's presented to you. I could nail some people's hands to the table and say, don't click this email. And they would take their nose and be like, click. Like, that's literally how it is. So, and I mean, that's just the reality. Like, you can train them, and you should. I really think everybody should be trained. But if we rely on humans not to be humans and to do the things that people do because we love clicking, right, you're going to fail. So you should apply technology to control that and stop them, like you're talking about, from being the avenue of compromise. And to your other point, you get to do your job, but you're safer, right? Go off and do whatever you need to do. Do stuff you need to do for work. But if you do something weird or something strange occurs, I'm going to stop it from happening. And if someone argues with you that they don't want you to be doing that for their machine, if it's my business, then guess what? Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you. Like, this is not going to work. I'm sorry. My job as, running a company is to make sure I protect this enterprise. If you're going to endanger that because you don't like me looking at and controlling what you're doing on my machine that I gave you, GTFO. Like, I don't need you here.
So how can we stop? Obviously, applications, first fundamental flaw. We got network, applications. Network's pretty easy. We'll get into that. But applications, how can we stop them attacking us? We can use an antivirus, and we probably should use an antivirus. And an antivirus is essentially going to look at an application and say, is this good, is this bad, based on what I think. It's kind of about as good as making decisions as Chase is with picking wives, apparently.
Yeah, right. That's a perfect example of how not to do things.
So Chase just got married again.
I'm on number three.
Yeah. Maybe you learn. But we use an antivirus. That's one way we can stop malicious software. But the goal is here, we need to stop applications being used against us. So we need to stop them. The other thing we can do is we can deny by default. Zero trust. The idea of zero trust is really simple. It isn't brain surgery. It's if it's not on the list of needed to do your job, not good, because there's no such thing as good or bad, that's needed to do your job, then it doesn't run. And if it can't run, it can't hurt you.
You also usually see when folks actually engage in zero trust, and there are studies that are starting to be published on this finally because of the fact that it's become a global thing, that there are business benefits as well as there are technological benefits that you see on machines that are put into this posture, where a lot of that crap that you didn't need running anyway is no longer there, so you get more performance out of your machine. Users, and I've got the study to prove it, 83% of users that are in a zero trust environment say that they actually enjoy and engage more with the security operations team and the technology in front of them because they're not dealing with all that other crap. Like, isn't it annoying to get that alert that says, file whatever, file scan, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't you just rather do your job and have the machine take care of it every time? Like, my Dodge truck doesn't tell me every time the oil pressure changed by 3 PSI. It just keeps driving because it's a Dodge. If it was a Ford, it would probably blow up, but another story.
So there's two options there to stop bad software from running in your environment. And one of them is use an antivirus. Oh, and there's not one or the other. Normally you use both. The other one is deny by default. Denying by default doesn't have to be difficult. We'll talk about that later. We also need to protect the data. So protecting the endpoint is pretty simple. We've got two objectives. Don't let network traffic come in that isn't needed, which is no inbound network traffic on your endpoint. And don't let any applications run that aren't needed. That's, and we'll get into the weaponization of applications as well in a moment. Protecting your data, it's the same scenario. We've got to protect the network. So corporate firewalls protecting your endpoints, they're gone. You should have personal firewalls on all of your computers. Corporate firewalls do not exist anymore. There's too many people outside the perimeter. And the only difference between now and a year ago is more stupid people are outside the perimeter, because the people who were paid hourly are worse than the lawyers who were used to working outside the perimeter, believe it or not. So you can't protect your endpoints, so you're using network protection at the endpoint. The data, we need to do the same thing. We protect it with firewalls. We have to stop unneeded traffic going to those ports. So we have a firewall, whether it's a next generation firewall or a basic firewall, and we're saying, this is what's allowed in. That should be zero ports in most cases. If you've got a web application, obviously you're opening a web port. But you're essentially saying, I don't want network traffic to get in that isn't trusted. Zero trust is new concept, relatively new.
Well, zero trust.
But network firewalls aren't.
Yeah, well, the idea for ZT, actually, just a quick history lesson, goes all the way back to 2003, 2004. If anybody here has ever heard of the Jericho Forum, the Jericho Forum was a bunch of CISOs and C-suite folks in New Zealand and Australia that had a great idea about what they called deperimeterized security. That was kind of the idea. It was like, what will we do when there is no perimeter? John Kindervog, who was the analyst at Forrester, went to a session and heard about that. He was like, that sounds really cool. I think that's what future looks like. However, it sounds kind of like a bad marketing term. Who wants to say deperimeterized security? And he just said, well, what are we removing fundamentally from the space? We're removing trust relationships, which trust is a human emotion, not a machine emotion, because machines don't have emotions. So let's just call it zero trust. And then it's moved on from there. So really, this thing's been around in theory and ideation since 2003. I mean, that's nearly 20 years.
But firewalls have been around since.
Firewalls have been around longer than that.
So, and they've been running on that exact same concept.
Yeah.
Default deny at the very bottom of the list. Only open what you need to open. And by the way, if you've got port 3389 opened, just close it. There is no justification for having 3389 open. Set up an RDP gateway. Put dual factor, you don't even have to pay for Duo to do that. You can use the free version and route it through a gateway. Don't leave RDP open on your internet. If you have it, go back to your office and just fix it, because it's a disaster. And I see it too often.
Yeah.
The next thing we need to do is stop malicious applications running on your server too, because it's the same principle. Now, the server and the endpoint have another problem, and the server is a little bit more difficult with this, but There's two areas we want to deal with the misuse or malicious applications. We don't want them to run, and that's where the antivirus or the default deny comes in. But we also want to prevent the damage that can be done when they're misused. Who here thinks that patching is a stupid idea? I've got one client, at least, that does. So the answer was, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Guess what? If there's a patch, it's broken. The company didn't decide one day, I'm going to release a patch for fun. I mean, no one wants to do something for fun. If you have a patch, patch it. And I'm going to get into a reason why in a moment. But I also want to talk about how we can stop that. But when we're protecting our servers, we've got to protect the data. We also need to, because this is where the data is, and I know the data can rely on the laptop too, so this applies to the laptop or the desktop. We've got to protect the applications, and we've got to encrypt the data. So if somebody breaks into your office and walks out with your server, which I've seen on several occasions, they're not walking away with usable data. Good luck in getting the server out of some of the racks I've seen as well. They give up most criminals with the correct cables. So this is too much hard work. Let's just go next door. But encrypt the data and protect the applications, protect the network. Now, I want to jump more into, and also stop attackers logging in. So I've added the dual factor into here. Look, people are stupid. I'm going to say this a lot. Do not. So we're going to show you tomorrow, I think, or in the morning, how a very good friend of mine in the UK, who's an MSP, third level tech, how he was stupid enough for me to get into his system within an hour. Like, I'm going to show you how I did it. And that's a third level tech. You cannot rely on people not doing dumb things. Their password is going to be compromised. Put dual factor authentication around all your data on all your applications that have access to data. Make sure there's dual factor authentication because it's going to be compromised. Now, it doesn't solve every problem, but it solves one problem.
And it's not, there's not a valid argument for someone to say that we can't do this MFA thing. Like, it's difficult, it requires an extra whatever. If you physically cannot move your finger to click that thing when it shows up, then you need to go see the physician. But my 10-year-old for Fortnite, the first thing she did when she created a Fortnite account was set up MFA. Like, that's how hard, she's got a phone, because I'm one of those dads. And sure enough, the first thing she did was she set it up in MFA. And I was like, why did you set that up? And she said, well, I want to make sure somebody didn't get my V-Bucks. And I mean, it's one of those deals where she's 10, she doesn't know anything about cybersecurity, but there's something of value for her that she wants to protect. And she knows that as long as she has to do an extra step to auth, it makes her a harder target than everybody else. So anyone that argues that they can't do MFA or they, you know, think it's too much work or whatever else, a 10-year-old can do it.
So back to just summarize on the server side, on the data side, nothing should be able to run on it. Now, some of this is in the cloud, so that's outside of your control, and you just have to pray Microsoft knows what they're doing. I mean, with Exchange up on the screen. So make sure you protect the front end of it from network. Again, if it's in the cloud, it's outside your control, and make sure you protect the application, logins, credentials, and things like that. Now, talking about applications that like to be weaponized, let's not try to beat up on SolarWinds too much, but we can't not mention SolarWinds. We see vulnerabilities all the time. They happen. I mean, Microsoft released 80-something thousand new files in this month's Windows updates across the 55 versions of Windows 10 that are currently supported, or whatever it may be. And then most of those files are patches to fix things. So there's vulnerabilities in software all the time, and those vulnerabilities get fixed all the time. We should patch the software. It's a good thing to happen. But SolarWinds was slightly different because it was software being used against the clients, but it wasn't because of a vulnerability. It was because someone got in, well, and we don't have the full details, but the gist of it is somebody got into their source code and implanted
the Russians. Code. The Russians.
The Russians. Well, we know the Russians. Yeah. I'm going to get shot walking out of here or something. So it got into the source code and implanted malicious code. So this was an intentional vulnerability as opposed to an unintended one. Exchange was a slightly different scenario, we hope, and that was an unintentional vulnerability. Did anyone get hurt by the Exchange? Two clients or just?
We had about six.
Please go to Lifecom here.
Oh, he's good. We can hear him.
Only the virtual camp.
Oh, he said about six.
Six. Oh. Oh, we were saying
talk to the virtual stuff.
Yeah, there's a microphones at the side of the room. So the Exchange vulnerability was probably one of the worst we've seen recently for two reasons. One is it's really difficult to realize how big of a mess it is. Nobody really knows. And the other thing is there's very little anyone could have done to stop it. So you could have the best security software in the world and it could still take your data from the server. Sometimes this stuff happens and it's part and parcel. This is the risk. This is why you have cyber insurance and for no other reason. But there are some things you could do to stop both of these applications being exploited and every other application exploit we've seen recently. SolarWinds, when it was exploited, the way it worked, and I don't know how much you've dug into this, it connected to a malicious site. So essentially 2 weeks after going live or a period of time after being live, it looked out to the internet and it said, connect to this site and get me some instructions on what to do. And those instructions could be to call on PowerShell, to create scheduled tasks, to do all sorts of other things. You couldn't take away the vulnerability. That's on SolarWinds. They've taken it away now, and I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. And it's not everyone's got vulnerability, so I'm not trying to beat up on one company. But what you could do is say, well, hey, this is what SolarWinds needs to do. SolarWinds needs to access this, which was a lot. It doesn't need to access my file shares because it doesn't monitor my documents. It just monitors services and things like that. And the one thing that would have stopped it is it doesn't need to go out to the internet except to SolarWinds.com. That's the only site it had a valid reason to talk to. So if you were to take that application and to stop it talking to the internet outside of trusted sites. That vulnerability is dead. It can't get its instruction. Now, we're not always going to fall that lucky, but it's as simple as that. You can reduce your surface area of attack on your applications by limiting what they can do. And Exchange is another example. There was nothing you could do to stop that mail, your mail being downloaded from Exchange, other than patch it once you knew about it and hope that you didn't get hit. Now, there are, we'll get into detection afterwards. There are some detection techniques, that high bandwidth usage and things like that, that may have triggered an alarm once an excessive amount had been done. But in general, there was nothing you could do. But what you could do, the other thing that Exchange did, was reach out to PowerShell and talk to other components on your system, embed backdoors. You could stop it becoming an entryway into the rest of your network.
Yeah, it's when you go and talk to the folks that are actually dealing with the fallout from this right now, I've done that, and they told me, they're like, we kind of had this right off the bat, but where they lost it was when it started moving laterally, right? It sat there and did what it did for a while, and they kind of knew something strange was going on in certain systems, but because it had moved laterally as fast as it had with all those other capabilities, doing things that it shouldn't have been able to do, it was too late. I mean, then it becomes, you know, COVID-19, where it just spreads everywhere that it touches.
These are just two examples of how an application can be used against you. And when we're building security stacks and we're thinking about security, we want to make sure that we're trying to limit what can run and what it can do. So if you're running Exchange, if you're running SolarWinds, if you're running Office, it shouldn't be able to call PowerShell. If you're running PowerShell, and we're going to show you demos later on why it shouldn't be able to see your files. Of course, we need to protect the connection. I don't know what more is to be said other than encrypt. It doesn't cost a lot of money for a certificate. I did go on an IT MSP's website the other day because I was looking through, and whoever it is knows who they are, whether it's virtual or physical. I was looking through some of the attendees to make sure that MSPs are coming, and one of the websites didn't have an HTTPS cert, and it's like, come on, it's $10. Just buy a cert. If you don't have one, pay for it. Applications, obviously, even more important. Just make sure your connection's always encrypted, whether it's through SSL or something else. It doesn't take a lot of money or effort. Now, we can stop, as close to stop as possible, breaches by controlling the network, the connection, and the applications. This is fundamentally what we're trying to do. Once we open things up, we open them up as needed on a zero trust basis, and that's where post-breach detection comes in. That's when you start looking at an EDR or a SIM with a SOC, an MDR. And that is for the, oops, we screwed up on our controls, we opened them up too much, which you shouldn't have done in the first place, but it happens, or Exchange downloaded a load of data because there was a vulnerability that couldn't be stopped. And this is where post-breach detection comes in. It's not here to protect you. Your protection has to start with blocking things and making sure your firewalls are locked down and making sure your users don't. Well, if you block things, they can't click on things either. But post-breach, that's when we start getting into endpoint detection remediation. I don't know what your thoughts are on this. Looking at a SOC, engaging a SIM.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think we've finally done better in the space where now you see EDR, right? The last piece being response or remediation, whichever word you want to use. Because that's what it's really about. Like, you're going to have a compromise. Somehow, sooner or later, patch, whatever. I don't care who you are, how bad, awesome your security system is, whatever. Somehow something's going to happen. So it's about response, and it's okay to have one tree with some smoldering embers inside of a forest when you go up and spray, you know, foam on it and put it out. What's not okay is to have the entire forest burning around you while you're running around with a, you know, fire extinguisher trying to put it out. It's not going to work. So EDR, pretty critical there, but it's the response part that's critical. It's not the technology to detect and figure out what's going on there. SIM, by its very definition, is not really doing much. SIM just tells you that there's a problem, right? If I had a dollar for every organization I talked to when they were talking about how they have security ready to go, they'd say, we have a SIM. It's like, great. Like, what do you do with it? Well, it's SIMing. I don't know what SIMing is. It's telling us that there's things. It's sending us lots of alerts. Cool, but what do you do with those alerts? That's why they have to have SOC. This is why I'm such a big fan of like MSPs and MSSPs, because you can take that load off of folks that's not their job. You know, the piece about that that's super critical is to be able to respond when you see that there's a problem and have controls in place that the problem does not become cataclysmic just because of the nature of the system with which it resides. Like, that's what we don't want. So These two things, I think, are increasingly critical in the space.
Yes, and what's important is these are not prevention to stop a breach. They're prevention stopping a breach turning into a forest fire.
It's proliferation, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to control, you have to be monitoring them, you have to follow up with them. The first tools, you need to have the prevention in place first, and this is something went wrong and we're coming in after the fact.
And if you're doing it right, you won't have 35,000 alerts per day per analyst. No human can respond to that. You'll have 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 maybe, of things that actually require response. If you're using technology correctly in the space today, you've eliminated the majority of the Bobo problems that you would run into that just don't need to be on your system anyway.
Even one of the important things about implementing a hardened environment, a zero trust environment, whether it's a firewall denying network traffic, it's application whitelisting denying software, it's ring fencing controlling software, it's permissions on your file share, is reviewing that information. And you know, we spend a lot of time getting people onboarded and then try and get them to come back and say, okay, we've got onboarded, now let's review what you've got, and constantly reviewing it. Anyone here SOC 2? Nope. Got any SOC 2 Type 2 MSPs? I'm not a big fan of SOC 2. We're SOC 2 Type 2. I'm not a big fan of it. But one thing I do like is it makes us review our firewalls consistently. So if someone does something dumb, because MSPs like to overdiagnose, or IT people like to overdiagnose sometimes. You go into a client, you've got a really good firewall structure, you're only allowing outbound traffic to the internet to duo from the server because that's all it needs, your network's perfect, and then one day you're having a problem, so someone says, let me just turn off this policy, or turn on an allowable policy to see if...
See what happens.
To see what happens. And their intention is never to leave it on, but it's like, okay, the customer's back up. Yeah. So having a review stops... two things, review your policies and then review your audits for what is happening that shouldn't be happening. So if you're using default deny, zero trust, endpoint security, see what's being blocked. Because there's only three things, only three reasons something's being blocked. One is you haven't configured it properly. The other one is someone's doing something that they shouldn't be. And maybe you can't educate them, but just telling them, look, you tried to run something. Stop trying to download games on your computer. You're not allowed to do this. Or the third reason is not configured. Or the third reason is there's something on your system that you don't want on there. It's being blocked, but it's still trying to run every single day. And I see this with Dropbox all the time. People go in and say, deny Dropbox. And their audit's full of denies. Like, yes, you deny Dropbox for a reason. Remove it from your system. It's important to review your audits, review what breaches are attempted, so you can preempt attacks before they happen. I'd like to open up for questions. I don't know if you've got anything you want to say first.
Well, the only other thing I was going to throw on top of that was it's critical when you're doing post-action to really do tabletops, right? And I mean full tabletops, from walking in on a Monday with folks sitting around a table and saying, you were just breached, you were hit, the world's on fire, what do you do, ready, go? And if they can't start processing through that and talking about how they would do it, how they would respond to it, which things they would have in place, whatever else, like that's where you want to find those gaps. That's where you want to see that there's a problem, because when it does happen, it's way too late to be tabletopping that whole thing. So, you know, for the MSPs and those that provide those types of services, if you're not doing that, you should be putting that in front of your customers and clients, because I can tell you from the red team perspective, I've been at lots of organizations that have somebody doing security for them, but they've never tabletopped an actual event, and they've never ran through, what do we do when the ship is sinking? Like, who's gonna bail water, who's shutting hatches, who's lighting up firefighting gear, all those things. And if you're not ready, when panic sets in and the stress levels rise, that is not the time to figure out how to get involved in a fight. It's really not gonna go well.
Before we open up to questions, and hopefully there are some questions, I wanna just summarize. Whether you're at the server or the endpoint, they're the two places where your data can be accessed. Applications, that's how you're going to get compromised. Network connections, or network inbound network connections, and then the connection between the client and the server. They're the three ways you can get compromised. So when you build your security stack, think from that angle. Think, how do I add those layers? And whether you're adding application whitelisting or antivirus, you got to think, how can I stop the bad apps running? How can I detect them after they're running? Everything should revolve around those things. There's lots of magic words and lots of marketing out there, and there's billions of dollars that goes into marketing in the cybersecurity world, which makes your life even more confusing. But think, this is what I'm trying to protect. How do I get to protecting that? And if you decide to stop malicious applications, one of the things I want to do is have end user training. That's a good strategy as well. It's not foolproof, but it increases your odds of success.
Train them. Yeah, I mean, train them.
I always know, I've done a lot of penetration testing before. Every time I want to get into a company, if there's one employee, it's really, really hard. If there's two employees, it's really hard because I've got to get one of those two people to do something really dumb, which is difficult. If there's 50, it's really easy. You know one of those people is going to do something dumb, and it gets very easy to move around once you're in there. When you do have data at rest, just encrypt it. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't harm. Encrypt it and make sure you're protecting your applications with strong passwords and dual-factor authentication, because your idea of a strong password might not be the same as your client's idea of hello 11.
MAGA 2020 exclamation point.
So I do want to open up for questions for me or Chase or both. And if we can use the microphones if you have questions, if you don't mind.
It's like day one, everybody's back to actually in-person things. They're worried about breathing each other's air.
Yeah, well, either that, we either did a really good job at explaining everything,
they
or we just
probably want to ask why we have such hatred towards lawyers and that type of thing. But.
Nope. All right. Guess there was too much drinking in the bar. So the good news is you get more go ahead. Do you want to go to the mic if you don't mind? Or? There's a microphone just there, just for the people who are not
on the Zoom.
I love the simplicity. Thank you. I didn't detect or hear anything about like encryption in flight. It seemed like you were focused on the access and where it resided.
So the three areas were, just to clarify, the network, the connection between, which is the encryption in flight, which is where we're talking about the SSL.
Okay.
And then there's obviously at rest as well, the encryption at rest. Encryption at rest, just to be clear on this one as well, because a lot of people think my files are encrypted, so my data can't. Applications can still steal your data because they have access unencrypted. So, but yes, all three. But.
You didn't seem very high on firewalls, hardware firewalls. Do you actually think they're at a point where we don't need to focus on having those for the, you know, especially small businesses where maybe there's 10 people and five of them are working at home? Do we need to say, okay, maybe you guys don't need to pay for a firewall, there's a better option for you?
So obviously at the end point you need a firewall because you have to assume that your network is compromised. The firewall, hardware firewalls, I would say, you might have an opinion on this, is more about protecting your servers. So if you've got server infrastructure, you've got to make sure that's where your hardware firewalls play an important play. Important part, but also just because you have a hardware firewall around your perimeter, on your servers, make sure you have local firewalls as well. Because if someone gets on one server, that could be the difference between them getting on one server and managing to move around your organization. So I think hardware firewalls protect your perimeter where your assets are, where your data are. My opinion is, you might have an opinion, 10 people sitting in an office with a broadband connection is no difference to 10 people sitting at home with a broadband connection. Make sure the endpoint firewall is good.
Yeah, I think that it's more about basically the size of the organization and the risk calculation there. And if you're 25 people and most of you are remote, you probably don't need a big, bad hardware firewall. You can do things with logical firewalls, with the cloud, with segmentation, with isolation, those types of things, and not pay for that big, expensive, you know, box to sit there and collect dust. Most of the time when I've run across organizations of sort of small in size and they have those, it's never used for full capacity. I mean, you're just fronting a whole lot of money off to the provider to get that thing up and running. So, you know, I do agree with Danny. I think it's more about really good segmentation, really good isolation, and using virtual and logical controls more than it is a hardware-based something. Hardware is kind of going the way of the dinosaur now, so it's almost hard to justify that cost for anybody anyway, especially if they're not a mega enterprise.